Midlife is full of transitions, and sometimes we don't know when they're coming, and sometimes we don't know that we're in them, and sometimes we don't realize how big and impactful they're going to be when we're kind of treading water through them. Today's guest, Sonia Fahair, is someone who not only intentionally embraced the transition she was going through in life. She's taken that to bring that same spirit of helping people find their clarity and their purpose and just ride through these transitions of midlife with some joy. And I am so happy to get to introduce you to her. Welcome to Surfing the Quicksand. Getting into midlife as women, we definitely did not have a guidebook or a fairy godmother or someone who's going to warn us about what happens or warn us about how dealing with all of this change is going to uproot our lives. And there are times where I know for sure, for me, I wish I had somebody helping guide me through difficult transitions at this stage. Guide me through transitions at any stage, I think, would be a great thing to have around. And today I have a guest on who kind of does just that. I'm speaking with Sonia Fahair, and she is in Austin, Texas. I know her through my organizing life. You have heard me talk about my Frolleagues, Friends Plus Colleagues, from the National Association of Productivity and Organizing Professionals, NAPO. And I met Sonia several years ago through our mutual love and business in speaking. She's a speaker and an author. She's an organizer. But most importantly, for why I have her here today, she's a midlife women's coach, and she really focuses on helping women find and reclaim and maybe redefine their purpose with clarity and joy. I am so happy to have Sonia with me today to talk about her own transitions in life, her own businesses, and how she really works with women today, and maybe give all of us a little bit of inspiration and purpose as we think about how to embrace our change. Welcome, Sonia.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here too. I love frolic. That's awesome.
It's like the favorite term. It's a word I never heard until I joined NAPO, and now it's the thing I get the most out of is these great relationships. And as I've talked already on this show, I have some wonderful, wonderful people coming from NAPO as guests, talking about things other than organizing, quite frankly. So I want to start. One of the things I love about you're in your 50s, like me. We have very similar upbringings. We have similar parent age, all sorts of different things very much in line. And as I've come to know your personal story and how you kind of did your own transition into midlife, I think it's unique and special. And it tells so much about how I know you are committed to this working with midlife women. Would you start by sharing a little bit about that story?
Sure. It wasn't a really great story, and I never ever would have wished it upon myself, but it's turned out to be the most extraordinary life change I've ever experienced. So I was 39 years old, had just turned 39, and had decided that I was going to spend a year working through Gretchen Rubin's Happiness Project, where she experimented with all of this happiness research to see if it worked for her and then wrote about it. And so I was going to see if it worked for me because I was someone who am someone who has a history of suicidal depression and generalized anxiety disorder. And I had a small child, a 3-year-old. And I just really wanted to learn how to be happier. And so I had a blog called Mama True because my child's middle name is True. And I was going to write every day about happiness for a year. And 3 weeks into that year, my husband asked for a divorce. And 3 months into that year, he admitted he'd been having an affair since the previous summer. And I still ended up writing over 300 blog posts that year about happiness. And it ended up just being such a gift, like so serendipitous that I had already committed to that work and so just kept doing it. It would have been really easy to drop it in the midst of all of that crisis, but I decided to keep going. And so my transition into midlife was getting divorced and looking at my state of mind both through that, but in my life leading up to that. And I can talk more about the happiness project stuff, but the thing that's coming to mind that feels like it just so much represents what that change was that I went to get my eyes checked and they told me that I needed to get progressive lenses. And so trifocals, right? They don't have the lines in them anymore. They're fancy in that way, but it's still like, oh, I'm an old person. I need trifocals. I need progressive lenses. And I'm in, and so they're too complicated to be filled at any of the inexpensive LensCrafter iMaster places. So I'm in a real optometrist shop and it's going to cost like over $500. And I'm in the middle of a divorce and I'm worried about money and I've got all this age stuff, voices happening, and I start crying. And the guy there was just so sweet. And he applied every coupon they had that were not supposed to be used concurrently, you know, for the frames and the lenses and the whatever to make them affordable. They are to this day my favorite pair of glasses I've ever had. And I've been wearing glasses since I was six. So 48 years of glasses now. But it was like, oh, yeah, the age was so much at the forefront. I was about to turn 40 and my life was falling apart. And so I made a very intentional transition into midlife because the alternative was that I was going to be a puddle on the floor. And I had this kid to parent. Thank everything that there is that I had this kid to parent that I needed to stick around for.
Wow. And this is a while ago, I know for you. And so I appreciate you kind of going back in the time machine a little bit and kind of tapping into some of that emotion from that time too. I do want to talk about the Happiness Project for a little bit because this is something that people may have heard about. Again, it's been around for a bit, and it kind of had a big flash when it first came out, and
Right.
Gretchen Rubin kind of came on the scene, as far as I know, through that work. So I'm interested because it sounds like what I got was you kind of went into it knowing I'm gonna embrace this actively and intentionally, and you had already been doing it a little bit before your life kind of turned upside down. What was it that helped you say, I am g gonna stick through this because I do have every excuse in the book to not.
The stakes were so high. Like there was never a time that I needed to learn how to be happier more than in that moment. And, you know, I was crying and I had this toddler that wanted to comfort me. And so we had lots of conversations about emotions in that time, about how sadness is just another emotion and we don't have to be scared and I'm here for you all of the time. And you know, so I think there was some emotional learning that she did, you know, and parenting that I was able to do through it. But I also didn't just want to be crying all of the time and freaking my kid out. So that was part of the motivation. But part of it too was the act of really looking at what makes me happy was interesting. And I love to learn. And I was learning about myself so much through the process, you know, and part of it was that I'm not like Gretchen Rubin at all. Like in real life, what she talks about, her personality and circumstances and all of it wasn't that I related to her or that I was agreeing with the way she did it, but it was there, you know, there are various things we do, and I did other things that year too. Like I started meditating and going to a Buddhist meditation center and going to a divorce recovery group and other things, but those opportunities to get to know ourselves better, I think, are so valuable. And writing every single day about, like, even writing on our anniversary. I was in this room and there was a crab spider, which is like this huge, scary looking, it looks like a crab. It's big and freaky and it was dark. And so the spider web was like reflected in the light from my computer. And my ex-husband and his mistress were at the poetry slam, which is something we had done together for years. And so I was writing about what it meant for me to be here by myself rather than being in the world in that community that I had been a part of, and what it meant to have my kid upstairs. And that act always for me of writing and just really processing it through. What I say about it is that it takes all of those thoughts that are spinning around and it straightens them out, you know, as I'm putting them down on the page. And so I think it was the most cathartic but enlightening thing that I could have been doing in that year.
Can you share more about what the Happiness Project is and what that exercise, for instance, is the exercise that you did for a year what everybody would do?
No, not at all.
Okay.
You know, my blogging through the whole thing, I mean, maybe some other people have done it, but that certainly isn't what she suggests. What the book does is it separates each month of the year into themes. And so it might be parenting or relationship or money or something else. And so that month, you're concentrating on that theme and thinking about what makes you happy. Well, thinking about what makes you happy about money. What you want to spend money on when, like, you're in a, you know, I was in a situation where I had been the primary breadwinner for 12 years, and then I was going to stay home and take care of the baby for a while, and he was going to be the primary breadwinner, and instead he left. So I was a stay-at-home mom thinking about what kind of work do I want to go back out into the world and do. I was a certified teacher, and I had a master's degree in poetry, and I had run Sylvan Learning Centers, and so I could have gone back into an educational field, but the grading for English teachers, the prep, the all of it would have meant I just wasn't really present for my kid. And what I was very clear about was that I already wasn't having the life that I imagined, but I didn't want it to compromise my being the kind of parent that I wanted to be. And so looking at money when I wasn't sure what I was going to do next, and thinking about how I wanted to spend it or what made me happy to spend money on. It's like I like a pedicure and a massage, just like anybody else. But there was a level too of I had been an attachment parenting group leader, and all of the moms set up a food tree for me for the first couple months of the divorce, and they would show up. With, like, they asked what we like to eat or didn't, and snacks and food restrictions. And so I would just come home and there would be a cooler on my porch. And sometimes there was a vase of flowers with it, you know, because people wanted to make sure that it wasn't that I couldn't afford groceries, but they knew, like, the bandwidth of trying to prepare food for me and Ever was just going to be a lot on top of everything else. And so thinking about money in the context of that, of for the first time in my life, really being able to accept help, right? Not turning it away, not being too proud, not being ashamed, not powering through, but like, oh yeah, this is hard. This is hard and this is scary. And women are showing up in the way that women do. And I can say yes. And that's good for them and me too. You know, so for me, the looking at the theme each month and then really looking broadly at what was happening in my life and reflecting on not just the surface stuff, but like these other things. One of the themes was play. And so I created a tool that I wrote about on my blog and shared with parenting groups, and subsequently ended up publishing as one of the happiness tools in one of my gratitude journals, but about making a playlist where we really stop and think about what is fun for me, not anybody. What am I, you know, like not what somebody else would think is fun or boring or I would be ashamed to share or any of that. Because the first time I was alone, that my, he was, we were married at the time, my husband took our child out. I was so ensconced in parenting, I just wasn't sure what to do with myself. Like, I could have gone to the movies, I could have made plans with friends, I could have done whatever, but I didn't. And I ended up out in the yard, like trimming the hedges in the yard and like weeding the garden because I just wasn't even sure what would be fun for me in that moment. And I think that happens in motherhood, certainly, but I think that in midlife, like we have these different periods in our lives where we move through a transition and what used to be fun for us maybe isn't anymore, or our body won't do that thing, or right, like I'm not ice skating anymore. I'm not doing that, no matter how much I love it. Like, I don't want to break a wrist or fall down or do whatever. And so, being able to say, you know what? It's really fun to lie in a hammock and read a book, you know, and enjoy dappled light coming. Like, that's a great afternoon.
I love this.
Love
And
it.
I in my second episode where I kind of talked about kind of why we get stuck in clutter and some of the reasons and barriers that we have for letting go, I talked a little bit about when I work with people in my organize wearing my organizer hat, and we talk about their hobbies and the stuff that's in their homes related to their hobbies and their pastimes and past activities, and how it can be really hard, and we don't do it very actively to review, like, what do we have in our life that just actually doesn't resemble who we are today and doesn't reflect what makes us happy today, regardless of how happy it made us in the past, or how good you were at ice skating at a certain age. If that's not today, what does that mean? And we have so much stuff in our lives, clutter, when they're truly not valued and used, that can be connected with that. And what I like about what you're talking about, Sonia, is whereas my conversation was really around what can you let go of, you sound more like what can you invite in, or what can you do to reflect on what would make you happy today and now, and how do you shift towards that as opposed to just what are you letting go of?
Well, and I've done a lot of the letting go work, both personally and with my organizing and coaching clients, right? Like that piece of what no longer serves you, I think is a really important one. But I am somebody who would rather than focusing kind of on the lack or the scarcity or what I'm letting go, I would much rather focus on what it's making space for. And so that piece of, oh, yeah, right. I tried quilting and boy, I am not that exact. I don't want to measure that many times. I get kind of sloppy after I've been going too long. That's not really my art form, right? And being able to let all of that go so that I can do something that actually makes me happy or that I enjoy, that's a gift. And I think so often people beat themselves up for, I tried it and it didn't work, and I wasted money, and I should like this, and all of that. It's like I just view it all as this grand experiment of, oh, I'm trying it. And if I don't like it, then I get to try something else. It wasn't a failure, it was an experiment. I got my answer, and now I'm moving on to the next thing.
I love that. It's an experiment and I got my answer, right? That's so much around some risk taking. And my podcast is really about helping women get unstuck, right? And so one of the things I want to make sure people hear is it isn't that there's a right answer just around the corner for you. There might be a lot of maybe answers that have to get tried and have to be experiments to think about. Where do we go from here? How do we get unstuck from here? And some of them may just be experiments, and you get your answer, which may not be this is where we go next.
Well, and that can be disappointing too, right? But I think that piece of really giving ourselves grace, really allowing ourselves to feel the disappointment or the hope or the fear, any of that stuff that comes up. So much of what's happened with my Buddhist and meditation practice is about being with what is, you know, life on life's terms. And it's so easy to escape that. And I think that may be the answer too to your earlier question about why I kept writing about happiness that year, is that there was no escape. You know, this thing was absolutely happening. And so being with the sadness as it came up, being with the fear, thinking about the money, getting the progressive lenses, all of those things were just, all right, this is the next right thing I need to do. And then I get to do the thing after that and the thing after that. And so I think the thing that happens at midlife, though, that's so challenging is it's usually not just happening in one arena, right? It's happening with our bodies. It might be happening with our career, our relationship, our, you know, like our finances, our future goals, our parenting. You know, we have that happen to some extent in puberty, but we do it when we're still, most people at least, are still living with parents or guardians and somebody to look over them. Now we're at this end where we're supposed to be the grown-up and we're supposed to know. And so what do you do when you don't know?
What I like about what you're saying is that reminder of we are dealing with a lot of things that might be shifting at once. And right, it's even in the name of this podcast, right? The quicksand, right? Like our ground is very unsteady, and we can feel good about one area and feel horrible about all the rest. And then to the tomorrow that might switch. I think the other thing that happens a lot for midlife women is many of us are also involved a bit more with caretaking of our parents, right? And so whether that's kind of a full-time deal or just it's much more mindful and on our mind and on our plates and on our calendar, that's that other reverse of, gee, when we were in puberty, we had those people, kind of giving us some scaffolding and a little bit of a guide map, or at the very least support to get through it. And now we're in that situation where maybe not only are we doing for us, we're also doing it for them.
Absolutely. And it what you, that makes me think of is my mom died a couple of years ago of liver cancer, and she lived 5 minutes away from me. I was so grateful she moved down before she got sick, and so I was able to be there. But we were going through the drive-through of, Walgreens, getting a prescription for her, and she couldn't hear what the person was saying. And so I was having to answer for her, and I knew most of the answers, so I wasn't asking her first. But that meant she ended up feeling left out of the conversation. And when we left there, she said, "No one tells you about what it looks like to lose your agency and to lose your capability, about there being one thing after another that you can't do for some reason." Like her macular degeneration was affecting her sight. She had hearing loss. She had decided to quit driving. You know, she had gotten to the point with a cancer where she was weak and didn't feel up to like being in the kitchen and cooking like she used to. There were just so many losses. And that piece of watching that, and the very fortunate thing, I think, is that in our family, we talk about death really frankly. The first person I love died when I was 5 years old. My sister died 10 years ago, and there have been a lot of losses in between. And so it's just another topic of conversation. And so she and I were able to talk very frankly about that. And I try to live my life in such a way that I am aware all of the time that I don't have guaranteed time. And so what that means is, whether it's with my dad, who's still alive, who just turned 81 and is constantly talking about dying and being gone, or living without my mom and my sister, and what does it mean to not have a mom here anymore? What does it mean to have been a sibling but to no longer have a sibling? All those pieces, I think, are identity questions that we end up having come up in midlife. What does it mean to be a parent when your kid moves out and you're not getting to parent daily in the same way that you were? And it can cause a real identity crisis. And so those places where we can look at how we identify and use the opportunity to create ourselves anew, I think, are really powerful. And so we don't just have to be mired in all of the loss.
And what you're bringing up, I know that you kind of speak about specializing in helping people through transitions, and everything you just talked about is a transition of identity, right? I'm no longer somebody's daughter. I'm no longer somebody's sibling. I used to, parenting, but parenting is all different. And so much of that transitioning is not just what's going on in our life that's changing the world around us, but internally, the who we tell ourselves we are, who the world tells us who we are, that's transitioning too.
Absolutely so. And that piece of how midlife women have been talked about, right? That we are invisible after 40, or, certainly if you're on LinkedIn and you're looking at what anybody's saying about trying to get a job after 50, we live in a very ageist culture. And so trying to find something solid when are, my skin is thinning. My dermatologist wants to call them wisdom spots, but like I'm really clear, those extra brown dots on my arm are from age. And that piece too of menopause and perimenopause, that whole journey, it's what you said before about like there's not a guidebook. It's like, gosh, would we really want to read that book? Like, okay, you're entering midlife. Here are everything. Here, you're going to get chin hairs and you're not going to be able to see the book unless you do this. And it's going to be more tiring to walk up a hill. Like all of those pieces. It's a lot.
Yeah, I do feel like, it's like the what to expect when you're expiring. It sounds like an awful book that you wouldn't get past chapter one. You wouldn't get past the introduction, say this is all too awful. But at the same time, we have mystery, and no two stories are the same, and we're dealing with so many different things. Some of it's, I don't want to say in our control, but some of it is in our influence, and some of it is
Sure.
not. I
And
want to.
we're not expiring. That's the
Right.
thing,
Thank you.
right? Like, that's the message, and that's what it can feel like. But it's like, no, we're really in midlife.
Yeah.
And that's been so interesting is to think, oh, wait, like, I'm probably at about 55, not really at the very middle point. I'm probably past it some. I doubt I'm going to live to be 110 or that I even want to, really. But that piece of, wait a minute, I've got decades more on the planet. What do I want to do with that time without parents, without a kid in my house to take care of? I mean, some people do continue to have the kids around, but like, oh no, just me. What do I get to do next? Like, that can be scary, but it also could be this grand adventure too.
So I want to pivot a little and talk about just that and the work that you do with women to help them wrestle with this, explore it with discomfort, and try to embrace what comes next. Can you talk a little bit about what you mean by you're a midlife women's like life coach and what you do with folks?
Sure. I tried working with men. I can work with some of them, but I just think women do things so very differently. And the way that our bodies interact with the world, all of the ways that we communicate and feel, I just think are so incredibly powerful, but also maybe undervalued. And so those places where women can come to me and say, this isn't what I thought. I did all of the external things that I thought were going to make me happy, right? Whether it's marriage, kids, house, career, college degree, any of it, right? We are told all of these things that you're going to hit these milestones and then you're going to be happy, or then you're going to feel accomplished or done or whatever. And at midlife, we know we've done that. And it doesn't mean that some of them weren't fulfilling, but there's still also a, okay, what else is there? Kind of a question out there,
Yeah.
and part of it is hedonistic adaptation in that we're designed not to be satisfied. We want more of something. And so whether it's a bad thing or a good thing, we can acclimate to any circumstances. And so this piece, of coaching midlife women is really about What are my current circumstances? What do I intentionally want to do with my life? So, are there specific goals I have? We look at life zones, you know? Some of them may be really great, and others we're going, oh, you know what? I had this group of friends, but they were all mom friends, and that season is over, and we're figuring out we don't have quite as much in common anymore, you know? So,
What are life zones? Tell me, what is that?
ooh, life zones could be, like I said, career, could be spiritual, could be health, family, social, friendship, romantic. So when we look kind of at the whole life as a picture and we say, oh, this zone right here, this is really full, but over here, I haven't been paying so much attention to that. That's a guidepost, right? To
Yeah.
say, yeah, this is a thing I keep telling myself I want to do. I'd like to go to bed earlier and eat better and drink more water and exercise. But like, I just wasn't really prioritizing my health because I was running kids around, but they're not here anymore. I don't have that excuse, but I don't really know how to get started. It's like those pieces too of experimenting of, well, do you want to join a hiking group or a gym? Do you want to do, I love doing yoga with Adrienne videos. She's somebody from Austin and she's got this incredible community, Find What Feels Good, yoga community and free yoga videos on YouTube, but a paid membership too. And I always thought I was somebody who couldn't exercise if I wasn't around other people for the peer pressure, right? Like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go deeper into my, you know, downward dog or whatever and hold it longer because everybody else is there. It was like, oh no, there's something really amazing about doing yoga at home in my bedroom in my pajamas with this person, and I can be the one that's holding myself accountable, right? So any of those life zones of looking at like, what do I want for myself? And rather than beating myself into it or shoulding myself into it or, you know, shaming, guilting, any of those things, like really working towards like, what is calling to me? And then again, oh, it called to me. I didn't like that so much. All right, that's some good information. I'm going to move on. And I can notice, ooh, I liked that part of it. So that might inform the next thing that I try.
I also really liked your kind of admitting there that some of it is you thought or you told yourself, I'm a person who I won't exercise unless, right? You had some beliefs about yourself and you were open to challenging yourself, right? And saying, right, is this true? What if I tried something differently? Would it turn out that what's been holding me back in a kind of a self-limiting belief about myself, actually, if challenged, I might learn something new about myself.
And I think that piece too of I'm a person who at this age is different than who I was at another age. So that was true of me before. But so those places where we can challenge the, wait a minute, I've grown up, I've changed, I've had these life circumstances that made me do things that I didn't used to do before might mean that we need to redefine who we are. You know, I'm a person who it could be a very different answer. I used to like ice skating, but now, like, I'd rather go whitewater rafting, you know, because if I fall down, at least I'm falling into water.
That's for me, that would feel like, not that I've ever been an ice skater. I think I've done it 3 times and all of them were just horrible. I'm lucky to have left them standing up. But for me, it's like, oh, gee, I own my own business. I can't afford to break a leg on something that I actually don't like very much. Right. It'd be
For
one thing if
sure.
I loved it. It's another thing to be like,
Right.
oh, I can't believe I did this thing and got hurt.
Well, and let's just say I was never like an Olympic level skater or anything, but we lived in a small valley with a pond down the road, and I would go ice skating with my neighbors, and it was a blast. And I tried taking my kiddo ice skating a couple times, you know, when she was littler, and it was like, oh, this is very different, this ice skating at this age. It's kind of like, I jumped off a swing on a date when I was 23 with my now ex-husband. We were out at a park and it was like, oh, that rushing feeling of like you're swinging so high and you get to fly through the air. But landing at 23 was way different than landing at 7. And I can't even imagine doing it at 54,
There
right?
would be no landing at this age. Couldn't even
Not
imagine.
gracefully, I don't
Yeah,
think, you know.
no.
And but I think those places where we might be prone to define that in a negative way of I can't, I'm not capable, I used to be able to, any of that, that can be a whole lot of loss. And so really turning towards like, what do I want now? What am I capable of? What could I afford to go try? Like, you know, that I belong to this women of this group of women called Next Tribe, whose slogan is Age Boldly, and it's for women that are 45 and up, and they have some chapters around the country, but they also take trips all over the world. And so, you know, they take trips to Egypt and you see people riding on camels. It's like, you know what, at 20, maybe you weren't gonna do that, or 30, but you could do it now. You could take the time off or afford it. Or if you can't, you know, like what is the big adventure you could have in your own backyard or your town or your whatever? And so those places where we can really look to, I think abundance and scarcity are problematic in either direction because it all is about lack, right? I need more, 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 or I have too little. So for me, it's very much about what is enough.
Let's talk about that, because that's very powerful. And I think it's a question that I find people asking a little bit more when I'm working with them now. I do it a lot in my kind of my career coaching side, where I'll have people who are thinking about what's next. And of course it comes up with salary, or it comes up with
Sure.
title, and we're like, oh, maybe I don't need to be vice president. Maybe I don't need to be the head of this. Maybe I don't need this. And kind of working through them with saying, you know, you established career aspirations or financial aspirations at a different time and a different age and a different kind of mystery about what comes ahead of you. If you were to start that thinking now and give yourself blank slate reflection on, so what is enough today? I think people come up with different answers.
I think so too. And I think part of what you're talking about with having to find it earlier in life is that a lot of it was external, that it was all these messages that we were given about how to do it or what was supposed to be enough or how to define success. I have a plaque on my desk, actually. It's a Dolly Parton quote that says, "Don't get so busy living that, or don't get so busy making a living that you forget to make a life." And that for me has been kind of the definition of success. You know, for me, it was, hey, if I can pay all of the bills and we can have some fun, but I don't have to put my kid in aftercare every day, that's a life, right? Like we've got this time together. And different people will define it in different ways. But I just think the opportunity to even ask the question, from the standpoint of like enoughness, right? We've got maybe those voices in our head that we're not good enough or successful or rich or skinny or whatever enough it is. And so stopping to really reflect like, what is enough in any area? How do I speak to myself? How do I interact with the world? That intentionality, that real mindfulness is where the power is, because then we're not looking for anybody outside of us to give us that validation. We're not looking for anybody else to define it for us. We get to. And that's power, right? And I think that's what midlife gives us.
I love that. And it is power. I think about when I transitioned out of my kind of corporate HR life. I was about 40, was 42, also with trifocals at the time. And we, you know, really saying, okay, can my husband and I, can we shift if I were to do something different, if I were to get into organizing, if I were to let go of corporate life? What would that mean? What's at risk? But also, what does that open up? And really, the idea of would we have enough? It draws the question of, well, enough for what? Right? And so often we're not asking that part of the question. Enough for what? And are we on this, are my spouse and I on the same page about enough for what? Again, reflection of enough based on external views, or have my internal views changed? So I love that. And I think the work that I do as an organizer, and I would expect that you do as an organizer in Austin, and expanding right to other cities, is surveying and inventorying stuff in that same vein.
Well, and home, right? Because another thing that happens at midlife is we might be looking at downsizing or
Yes.
right sizing. I'm in the process of, hey, I'm in this house that I thought I was going to live in with a husband and my two kids. Well, I have one. I haven't had a husband in a long time. I don't need this big house when my kid moves out. I don't want to take care of all of it by myself. And so those pieces that we look at of like, what is enough for a certain chapter of life? And certainly, I think we all have been given a healthy fear about retirement and making sure that we have enough to live on so that we don't have to keep working forever. And how is it going to be? But I think we don't talk often about what if we don't make it to retirement, right? Like, what if what we've been doing all of this time is saving up to have our big, good life later? And it's cut short. And how do we live every day now with that real solid understanding that we aren't promised that time? And so today, what is enough for me? What do I want today? I think is really important.
It's also, it feels like an exercise in gratitude
Ooh.
for where we are and what you have today. And the notion that tomorrow is not promised, the nest egg doesn't necessarily get cashed in the way you've intended, or how life unfolds for you isn't necessarily as you would have written it. And so re reflection and gratitude on what you do have.
Well,
We have to.
that was a huge part of the happiness work. And I ended up launching a group on Facebook during COVID called Women Learning How to Be Happier. It was in May of 2020 because everybody was just so isolated. And so this group has 750 people in it now, maybe a little more. But every day we post a question of the day to help people kind of get to know themselves better or get in touch with themselves. And every evening is a gratitude prompt. And I used to ask different, very specific gratitude prompts. And I may go back to that. I have at different points. But right now, we just kind of have a standing one of what are three things you're grateful for today? And doing that, scanning for the positive, really just looking around, even on the crappiest day, and being able to say, I have a roof over my head, or it was raining and gave me a break from, 93 degree heat in October. I wish it were raining. But just any of those things where we can notice what's going right instead of what's going wrong really shifts things. And I think I never would have imagined that this was the case. And I didn't know about neural reprogramming at the time that I was reading the Happiness Project, at least not as much as I do now through all the positive psychology research, but we can create new neural pathways in our brain, and creating those through gratitude goes a long way. And so if you think about being stuck in a rut, with your tire and you just can't get out because you keep going in the same space, it's like gratitude creates a new highway. It creates this whole other avenue to a different life. And so it's why I've written gratitude journals. They have a happiness tool every single week, but they've got gratitude prompts every day for morning and evening because bookending a day in that way of really thinking about like, okay, what do I intend for today? Or what am I looking forward to today? To look at what's about to happen, but then being able to reflect at the end of the day, well, how did that go? Did anything go differently than I intended? What would I do differently? What am I grateful for? It goes a long way.
I love this. Thank you so much for taking my gratitude point into such a deep deep area. And I know you had mentioned gratitude journals earlier in our conversation, and I'm so glad that we had a chance to kind of revisit that a little bit. I'm gonna switch gears. I want to do my quicksand three, my three questions that I ask all of my guests, and then we're gonna come back, and I want you to talk about your Facebook group and how people can work with you and in gratitude journals, because I know there are some people who are going to want to hear more about all of those things. So
All right.
my quicksand three, these questions are all kind of aligned with the roots of surfing the quicksand and what I hope people get out of being able to be on a journey like this with me and with my guests. So the first is, do you have a technique or a trick that you use to get yourself unstuck and do something you've been avoiding?
Yes, and I just never ever thought I would be a person that would give this answer. The answer is that I clean my house. And I'm not a person that really likes to clean. I'm way better at picking up. But there is something about just creating a clear field, and I learned it through the organizing work of just having such a tangible evidence of how the time was spent and really being able to see something be so completed. But if I'm stuck on something and I'm just avoiding, whether it's computer work or a conversation or whatever it is, if I start going through the house and picking up piles or sweeping and mopping or doing whatever, it just changes the energy of the space, and it changes my energy too, and makes me more capable of going into that next thing.
My gosh, I love that. I've always considered kind of, and I love that you said cleaning versus picking up are different. And that's a conversation I love having. But I find when I'm done with a big, overwhelming project, this was my life at work and at home. There's nothing I enjoy more than the full like clean up, wrap up, put things every way, this part's over. And again, speaking
Yes.
about transitions, like it's a physical way to initiate and execute that transition on my terms. And I love that. Next question is, if time in history or skills or money or any other factors were not, did not have to be a factor, what's a career or job you might have liked to try?
Volcanology.
What?
Right. My senior year of my undergraduate degree, I took a geology class, and I am not a science person, and so I had put off my science credits till the end. I had this incredible TA who just made rocks and earth come to life. Geology was just so fascinating. And volcanologists study volcanoes, and so they travel to volcanoes, they can predict when they're going to be active, they can study them. And though it's really truly not in my skill set, and my mind kind of glazes over with science, like I believe in it, I just don't need to understand it, the why behind it. But in another world, volcanology is one career path. The other one is that I think on another like quantum plane, I'm in the or was in the group Stomp, and traveling all around, drumming on random stuff and dancing. That's the other one.
Oh my gosh, I love that. And I took two geology classes in college and also found them like same thing. Like I got to take a science. All right, we called it rocks for jocks, but I loved it. And almost thought about minoring in it because I really did truly enjoy that kind of that study. That's
Right.
great.
If it hadn't been my senior year, I really might have pursued it further.
Oh my
Instead, I
gosh.
went and got a master's degree in creative writing and poetry, a very practical,
So funny.
hands-on degree.
And then my third question is, what is something that you do to recharge or hit the reset button when life feels chaotic?
I read. Reading
Okay.
is my favorite thing in the whole world. And I mentioned a hammock earlier. If the season is good for that, I like that. But I also am lucky enough to have a massage chair that I bought for my ex-husband, but he didn't take it with him in the divorce. And so I can sit in the massage chair. I can look out the window at the huge live oak in my front yard, past one of my dad's sculptures, right? It's this very peaceful space. The chair is giving me a massage. Maybe I've got a chai latte next to me or something. But yes, absolute best way to recharge for
Oh my
me.
gosh, I love that. Thank you so much. Thanks for going through those with me. So let's go back to how people can find you, how people can work with you, how people can kind of tap into your gifts.
All right. Well, they can find my website, spacewiseorganizing.com, by just putting that into their search engine and learn about my coaching services and other services. They can join my free Facebook group. It's Women Learning How to Be Happy on Facebook. And there are no requirements except that you identify as a woman to be in that group. And in terms of my other offerings, we've talked a lot about parenting, aging parents, and aging ourselves. I have services like emergency and end-of-life planning, which people can find on my website as well. I've got a downloadable, fillable PDF for making those plans for ourselves and our parents too. And my gratitude journals are available on Amazon, and so people can just Google my name, or whatever search engine you choose if you're not into to that one.
And we will
But
put all of
go.
those in the show notes too, so that
Yeah,
everybody can kind of
perfect.
click on there. Good.
Yeah.
And if women want to learn about coaching with you, because they've been listening to you and said, "Ooh, I think she would get me." What do you want them to
Yep.
know?
The thing that they should know is that I don't have some very strict template of it must go this way. I create a really customized plan for any women that I'm working with. Some people would like a short-term solution, and they just would like to have some support or accountability or ideas, right? Like sometimes it can be a failure of imagination. We just don't know what we don't know, and having somebody else talk through it with us can help offer kind of some inspiration and questions. So it can be a short-term thing, or it can be a, hey, I really know the next year of my life I'm making major transitions, and I just want support through the whole thing for whatever comes up, not some specific goal. I can work with people in that way too.
I love it. Well, I hope if somebody found this conversation today inspiring, they go straight over to one of the many links I'm going to put in our show notes. Sonia, thank you so much for being a part of Surfing the Quicksand and for sharing your personal story and your professional journey with us.
Thank you so much, Kathy. I loved it.
Thanks. Sonia's generosity of sharing her personal story is just such an incredible backdrop to the work that I know she does with women in groups and one-on-one, through her organizing practice, through so many different ways, her speaking, her books. She is someone who is very generous with her gifts and talent, and I'm so glad that I've gotten to know her over the last many years. I hope that you got some inspiration out of, again, not only her personal story, but her framing of what transitions and intentionality to reflect and inventory on what is going on in our lives today and what's true today and how that can impact where we go in the future. I hope all of that inspired some new thinking and fresh thinking for you about really where are you today? Where are you in a transition? Where are you post-transition? And what would enough on any of those life factors? What would enough be today that would help you make some different decisions tomorrow? Thanks for being here. If this episode spoke to you, I'd love to hear your comments wherever you're streaming this or over on my website, quicksandpod.com. Thanks so much.